Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast. ACC women led all conferences in the NWLS draft, with nine players from seven schools headed to professional soccer careers. The men put forth six players from six schools in the MLS draft. The ACC leads all conferences in the fall standings of the Learfield Directors Cup, with four teams in the top 10, eight teams in the top 20. Conference baseball gets underway in about a month, with the ACC registering eight teams in collegiate baseball's preseason poll, five in Perfect Games preseason top 25. Florida State men's and women's indoor track and field teams lead the conference as they land in the top five of the USTFCCC preseason index. Road to Nationals rankings of women's gymnastics, NC State comes in at 25. USCHO ice hockey, Notre Dame men at 9, Boston College women at 10. ITA team tennis, Wake Forest men sit at 1, and North Carolina women at 3 to lead the conference. Five men's and seven women's teams are ranked in the top 25. All right, guys, let's take a look at ACC women's basketball first. Last week, an amazing 1-2 matchup between Notre Dame and Louisville. The Irish fought their way back in the second half of the game and ended up with a dominant win. In the AP and coaches poll, we have Notre Dame, Louisville, NC State, Syracuse, and Florida State. Coaches poll includes Miami. Standings going into the weekend, remember, this is based on overall percentages of wins. NC State, Notre Dame, FSU, Syracuse, and Louisville are the top five in the ACC. The Irish are the top offensive team, averaging 88.6 points a game. Virginia Tech, top defensive team, they're holding their opponents to 55.9 points a game. You're going to see some correlation here in a moment between the women's performance and the men's performance. And look over your shoulder, there's a hungry Wolfpack closing in. Let's get to the men's side. Two number ones this past week. In the AP, it was Duke, coaches poll, Virginia, both holding down number one. In the standings, and again, my earlier disclaimer regarding percentages, the top five teams are Virginia, Virginia Tech, Duke, NC State, and North Carolina. The top offensive team, no surprise here, Duke. The Blue Devils are averaging 90.2 points per game, while Virginia is the top defensive team, holding opponents to 51.2 points per game. R.J. Barrett leads conference scoring at 23.4 points a game. Luke May, top rebounder, 10.1 per game. Upsets. We're in the air. So let's take a look at our schedule and what happened over the weekend. Notre Dame over Boston College by 3. Out and about traveling in snow. This is a man's dedication. He's putting himself and his family at risk. I hope you're not driving.
She's driving.
That's good. She's driving. She's probably a better driver anyway. I've seen you drive. I've seen you drive. We've talked about Mike Bray being, you know, the answer for helping Notre Dame become, you know, all that. Because as Will has pointed out numerous times, Mike Bray is a heck of a coach. And he can pretty much turn, you know, into chicken salad. So, but Boston College, Jim Christian, heck of a coach there. Got a lot of talent on the team. And it surprises me a little bit that Notre Dame picked up this win. And as I mentioned, it's a 3-point win. I didn't expect Notre Dame to pick that win up, to be quite frank about it. Your thoughts on these two teams?
Well, I mean, it sounds like, you know, that the game really came down to crunch time. And in times of crunch time, you really want to focus on the coach, not necessarily the players. And the coach's job is always to put the players in the best position to win. And as we saw with the outcome, Notre Dame's coach did precisely that in helping his team get the victory. So I'd probably bank it more on the coaching decisions and strategies late in the game are as the best outcome in determining the winner.
That's
saw that on display.
That is a good point because again, as I mentioned, Will has argued that Mike Bray is a heck of a coach and he makes things happen. So, Will, would you say that this was a Mike Bray versus Jim Christian outcome?
I think so. It was a pretty, like I say, pretty competitive game throughout. And one of the things that really separates Notre Dame from a lot of teams is they have, no matter how good or bad they've been a consistently good free throw shooting team. This game was no different. Even though they shot 34% from the field, they were 20 of 23 at the line. And, you know, 23 to 10 in terms of free throws, that was the biggest difference of this game. Say Notre Dame has had their moments, you know, was struggling in terms of shooting all year, but, you know, they kept it close. And then they say their free throws were the big difference of this game. Interesting to note that Notre Dame only played six players in this game.
Wow.
Not a very deep bench, but they got a great contribution from John Mooney, who went for 27 and 12. But the thing of Boston College, you know, Kai Bowman, we talk about how great of a player he is, first team, you know, all league player, 24 points and 16 rebounds in a losing effort, which it's kind of disappointing because that performance is going to kind of go under the radar because they lost. But he is such a good player, and a lot of the reason Boston College is going to have any sort of success.
Yeah, I think you guys have really hit this on the head with the coaching, because quite frankly, Boston College I think has better talent. You know,
I agree.
It's just you know, strategy and making things work and finding right combinations, and
it's that and responding with adjustments.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, real time. Because basketball is that way. I mean, you literally cannot wait until a half is over to go make your adjustments. You know, just doesn't it doesn't work. Louisville upended North Carolina, and it wasn't by any small margin. That game kind of blew my mind. I was like, is this the same team that just lost the Pit? Will take us down this road.
Yeah, this was definitely the weirdest result of the day. You know, I give speaking of good coaches, Chris Mack is a good one. I mean, he's got a team he's still, you know, trying to build, you know, with, you know, players that aren't his really, but still going into Chapel Hill after losing the Pit and giving them their first conference win in almost 2 years. Yeah, that's a pretty impressive performance. Going into Chapel Hill and shooting 51% from the field, holding North Carolina to 34%, and just having one of their worst performances of the season. You know, we were just talking about coaching, and you know, Chris Mack, you know, he's got one of the top recruiting classes coming in for 2019. You know, this is definitely a brand that's going to be back on the rise, and you know, one of the players I like on Louisville who played well yesterday was Jordan Aurora. He went for 17, but he was, you know, he's been one of their most consistent players all season long, averaging, you know, over 20, you know, quite a bit this year. And he's, you know, averaging for the season now of 17 points per game on 47% shooting from the field. He's a really good player who will be the kind of the go-to guy, but I'm really concerned about North Carolina. This is an uncharacteristic loss for them. I mean, you could argue now that they might be the fourth best team in the ACC, maybe fifth.
There is something I want to point out. Don't hold your nose when it comes to Pitt. I think it's easy for us to do that because of the track record the last couple of seasons. We have a new coach, a new mentality, and we've got some players who are definitely buying into that. And it's pretty obvious. These guys are going to have an up and down season. I mean, they're at that point, right? It'll be next season before we really see them turning a corner, but Pitt's not that bad. Not like they were last year. So let's not hold our nose too, you know, not be too quick to hold our nose when we're talking about Pitt. So that loss to Pitt, you know, that may be an indicator of something. At the same time, it's also an indicator that Louisville turned it around. And as you're talking about Chris Mack, doing a wonderful job there, again, making chicken salad, you know what I'm saying? I tell you, the one thing I take away from this, Xavion, and I've felt this for a while, and I don't know where this is coming from, to be quite frank, and maybe you can help guide me through this. I have felt that North Carolina just doesn't feel right. It hasn't felt right for a couple of years. And I don't know if that's a reflection of Roy or what? I'm not getting the vibe from them.
No, I would absolutely agree with that. I mean, North Carolina is North Carolina when it comes to basketball. So when it comes to bringing in talent, it kind of it just happens by itself. But outside of the championship they won recently, which I still kind of think was a little bit of a fluke and a little bit of luck, they haven't really done enough in terms of changing the style of basketball that we're seeing today in today's day and age. I do believe Roy Williams he's a fantastic coach and whatnot, but I don't think he's what your program needs at this very moment. I'm not going to say he's on the hot seat, but I could see another season of stuff like this going on and him being out of there, unfortunately. And it's not because he can't coach basketball, but I think it's just they need something to jumpstart that program again. As you saw before Duke had the string of this getting all the five-star young one-and-done talent, Duke was kind of in that same breath where they're still competing at the end of the day, but they needed a jumpstart for the program. And once Krzyzewski made that decision to, okay, I'll bring on one and dones. I won't keep the players that will stay here 3 and 4 years. I'll take the one and dones and see what we can do with that. We're seeing the success and stuff like that happen with Duke, and UNC kind of hasn't jumped on that bandwagon. The thing with Louisville though that I think what we talked about is the fact that Mac took something that was essentially viewed as the gutter of the ACC, and he's just doing it the right way. And we're going to see Louisville bounce back from this probably faster than most top programs could probably do, because Louisville is a quality school. They had some shady practices that led them to a shady, not underwhelming season last year. But you take out those cancerous pieces and bring in something of substance, and you can go right back to the top of the ACC and top of college basketball world. And we saw that yesterday with the, it was over 20 point victory over UNC. It's really a testament to Coach Mack and what's going on at that school now, as opposed to the old regime. So I just be on the lookout for Louisville, and I know I've been rambling, but be definitely on the lookout for Pitt, because that's a storied program when it comes to basketball. I know growing up in the early 2000s, Pitt was always in the conversation. Pitt is, I believe, really one season away from really making some legitimate noise in the NCAA.
Speaking of Pitt, let's stay right there. NC State, this is a program that is turning the corner, and it's a little more gradual, but it is building into something, I think, pretty solid under their new coaching regime, which is, I think, doing a great job. It's getting the mindset right. You know, holding on to some good players has been a struggle, but man, they're doing what it takes to win. But they got to fight out of Pitt. Pitt, well, you know, like I said, don't hold your nose when it comes down to Pitt. And you pointed out, Pitt, you know, was that name, you know, out of the Big East. They're coming back fairly quickly. So NC State, just getting by Pitt, they had a fight with them. You know, I mean, it was a struggle. That's a good thing to see. Number one, it's a good thing to see that Pitt's got the oomph that it takes to put up a fight and to hold the Wolfpack or anybody, a top echelon team, in a competitive stranglehold as long as they did. And the other thing is that it's good to see that NC State has the ability to say, you know what, when we get in these tight games, we're going to put it all together and we're going to come out the other end. That's a sign of a championship team. That's a team that you need to watch carefully. Your thoughts on NC State with their win over Pitt, Xavion?
I mean, it's literally just what you said. If I'm a Pitt fan, I'm okay with losing if we're not getting blown out on the floor in the first half and making it look like we have no business playing with the other team. All in the first year for Pitt as a fan is you should want to have consistently close games regardless of the outcome, and a level of fight and determination in your team, because that's going to lead to future players coming and whatnot. They're going to see, you know what, their record wasn't that great, but they were in almost every single game. So that's something to build off of and to kind of tip your hat off if I'm a Pitt fan. And just like you said for NC State, you know, if I'm in consistently close games, but I'm coming out in the outcome, come tournament time, that's basically every game is going to be that. You're going to be in a close game, and you're going to need somebody or some players to step up and coincide with the coaching stepping up and making proper adjustments. But you're going to be needing that come tournament time. And if you've done it not only in the regular season, in conference games, in the conference tournament, come tournament time, you're just playing basketball at that point. The situation's not going to be any different. A lot of times fans look at like, oh, we should have blown out Pitt. No, I mean, Pitt is it's a Division I basketball team, regardless of the past successes. It's a quality team nonetheless. So if you get a quality win, even if the opponent's at the lower half of the division right now, you take that and you basically run happy with that. Because, again, on the other end of the foot, they could have lost to Pitt. And then what are you saying in adverse?
Mm-hmm.
So it's you got to take the bad with the good, and look at it long-term wise. How is it going to affect your program going forward?
I like to run happy with that. that's perfect. Will, NC State, Pitt, a pretty competitive game.
Yeah, most definitely. And to just start off with Pitt for a second, and you know, we guys brought it up. You know, Jeff Capel is a much, much, much better coach than Kevin Stallings is, and you know, he won't threaten to kill his players. That's one of the big differences.
or throw chairs or anything like that. You know.
Yeah. Or tell them to get their bleeping head in the game when their player is laying on the floor on the court injured. But yeah. You know, whatever.
Brilliant.
I mean, as far as this game goes, yeah, great effort by Pitt. Obviously, they fell a little short. The big difference in this game was NC State's bench just putting up the majority of their points. They had three of their bench players in double figures, and they were all their leading scorers, led by Devin Daniels, who went for 19. And yeah, they did lose Markel Johnson in this game to an injury. Don't know exactly the severity of it, but he did not play very much. And it was up to him and DJ Funderburk, for example, and Eric Lockett, who all played very well for the Wolfpack, because their starters could not hit much of anything. I mean, Torin Dorn was 4 of 13 shooting. Braxton Beverly was 3 of 9. I mean, Wyatt Walker got ejected in this game for tripping a player. So NC State really needed to rely on the bench. And, Kevin Keats did an amazing job of working through that adversity to get a much needed win after the unfortunate loss to UNC earlier in the week.
I like Kevin Keats. I think he's a solid addition to that school for their basketball program, and I think he's going to make a big difference. It hopefully they'll hold on to him. If he has,
yeah, he's already there, and I think any Wolfpack fan will tell you Kevin Keats is a winner.
Yeah, great coach. Will, we'll stick with you. Miami picked up a win over Wake Forest, and I'm not going to dwell on coaching issues at all. When I speak of Wake Forest, as I have in the past.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Been nice to see Chris Likes really step up his game lately. He led the Hurricanes with 25 points. And we've talked about all the issues Miami's had this year with injuries and eligibility issues and whatnot. And they only have 7 scholarship players. Obviously, Larrañaga doesn't have much of a bench, and I've been calling them a good 30-minute team for most of this season in the conference play, which if you've watched their games, that's about the time that they slow down, is about the 30-minute mark, and teams will pull away or catch up and then pass them like NC State did, like Louisville did, 2 of them earlier this week. But in this instance, I mean, they were the better team. They had a nice home win, shot 47% from the field. Had a pretty strong game all around. Wake Forest, I'm starting to wonder if they're going to be the Pitt of this league. Last year's Pitt, where they struggled to win a conference game. And if you look at some of their upcoming games, you have to wonder.
Not to further besmirch Pitt, but
They have one chance. They basically have one chance to win, according to KenPom. They're favored in one game the rest of the year, and that's January 26th. They host Boston College, and
yeah,
I'll be honest with you, I'd still take the Eagles.
Yep, me too. So, Larrañaga, another good coach, a good example of a good coach who knows how to make something happen, and he's kind of in a tight spot here, but. He's going to find a way to win, and again, I think this is a reflection of coaching Larrañaga versus Manning, and I think the old dog, the OG, you know, he had more in the tank, and so Miami not having a great season. Wake Forest is oof. Your thoughts on this game, or either one of these teams, or either one of these coaches, Xavion?
It really, like you said, it kind of came down to the coaching situation and whatnot, as it most oftentimes and not, it usually does, because you can have all the talent in the world, but if you can't, as a coach, lead them and create that bond as a team, you're not going to go anywhere. And if you have the ability also to make the most out of when you have less, that's a tribute to coaching. So we really have to give our praise to Larrañaga and what he's doing with this program right now in Miami, because he's working with honestly nothing. If you only have 7 scholarship players, that you're playing a dangerous game, in my opinion, because you can only do so much with so little. So
that's very true. Hey, this is a game that I know that is certainly burned into your psyche, especially since it was recent. So we're going to stick with you, Xavion. Duke, with 0.8 seconds left, Cam Reddish drains a 3, pulls out the win over Florida State. It was almost a repeat of a significant loss that Duke had in Tallahassee before.
Oh yeah, no, it was a fantastic game. It was hard fought between both teams. I was tweeting as the last couple of shots and stuff. I was saying, you know, based on the inbounds play where it looked like the ball was, you just run a little pick play for Zion, let him come in on a little alley oop and just dunk it on everybody to take away the crowd and take away all the hype and whatnot from Florida State, because they were riding high. They were kind of celebrating the little good plays they were having going into that end. But I think the much bigger dagger was what ended up happening, is having Cam Reddish, who was wide open, and it was just like a little pull-up jumper for him from out there. And it literally took everything out of the building. Sometimes I don't like with college basketball is those, oh, we have to see how much time is left, even though it's literally like 0.8 seconds. Because I like being able to see, like, from basketball perspective, last play of the game, just the game ends like that. It's the hype. It's the crowd has the suffocating, deflating feeling, and then the other teams on their home court celebrating and whatnot. But for purposes for Florida State, it's a great loss for them, because it's a rating basis. They lost to a much better team based off ratings, mm-hmm. or rankings. But it also shows you and your team that, you know, they have apparently from all the other outlets that they have the best talented team, and we hung right with them until literally 0.8 seconds left in the game.
Yeah.
So that should give your team and the coaching all the confidence in the world that we can make some serious noise as the season progresses, because we just had one of the toughest opponents probably we're going to see, or toughest or most talented teams we're going to see, and we hung with them throughout the game. It's a loss, but you have to, you know, you have to make it flexible and work for you, if that makes any sense.
I won't point a finger at who specifically suffered from this, but somebody had brain flatulence in not covering him on that.
Yeah, that too.
It was like, what? I couldn't believe that final shot.
But that's a learning lesson for the team,
too. It is. It's a great lesson. I thought that's what I was thinking as you were speaking about that. I was thinking to myself, this is a great lesson for them. They were getting ahead of themselves. You know, they were excited about it, but you got to stay in the tempo. You got to stay in the moment. You got to stay in your zone, or or you're going to lose a game. And yes, it can happen with 0.8 or even less seconds on that clock. So keep your head in the game. Will, thoughts on that Duke win over Florida State?
Well, this is the big, we're talking about the big play there. Cam Reddish, you know, he's been struggling all season long to shoot the ball. You go look back at some of his past performances lately. You know, he had a 4-9 against Wake, which isn't bad, but 1-8 against Clemson, 1-7 against Texas Tech, 3-11 against Princeton, 4-12 against Yale, 2-12 against Hartford. And it was 9-15 in this game and 5-8 for three. And when Zion went out after getting poked in the eye, it felt like it was up to him and RJ Barrett to really pick up the slack. And they both did an amazing job filling that void. I think Zion's supposed to play in their upcoming game against Syracuse. It didn't sound like it was too serious a situation. He did have some double vision, I believe it was. But yeah, that last play, you know, I thought it was a massive defensive lapse by Florida State. Yeah, you got to be able to account for all five players on the court. And you know, say Reddish just slipped off a screen and there was nobody within like 6 feet of him, if maybe more. And you know, you're never going to get a more open game-winning three-point attempt in your life. So you got to hit it. And yeah, I thought it was a well-played ball game on both sides. I thought Florida State, I thought this was one of the few times Duke could get beat in this season. And even without Zion for the second half, they still found a way to win. But boy, are we in for a big one next Saturday.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be interesting. All right, Will, we'll stick with you. Georgia Tech, boy, how about this win over Syracuse?
Yeah, I did not get to see this game. I was at a hockey game last night while this was going on, and I checked my phone and looked at it, and I had a double take because, you know, Georgia Tech is not supposed to be going into the Carrier Dome and smoking Syracuse by 14 and outscoring them, you know, pretty much by that in the second half. And this is a Syracuse team that has not shot the ball well. They have a bunch of good shooters on the team, but as a collective team, they are not shooting the ball well. Shot less than 32% from this game, 7 of 33 from three. In this day and age, the thing is to shoot a bunch of threes, but when they're not falling, you've got to come up with a plan B, and there just seemed to be no plan B in this. And Georgia Tech shot almost 60% in the field. So, you know, they did an amazing job of that 2-3 zone, pretty much getting what they wanted. Jose Alvarado, 19 points on 5 of 6 shooting. That's pretty impressive. He had all three of his threes. And, you know, Georgia Tech played like a team that should be supposed to be middle of the pack in the ACC. And I mean, as much as I think this is a great one for them, I take more out of this from Syracuse, as they are a team that is trending towards being in the NIT.
Mm-hmm. Another team, Georgia Tech, that it may be an overreaction to hold our nose when we talk about them. Josh Pastner has done some things there slowly, you know, under the radar type of thing, moving that team along. And again, you're not talking about a really deep talent-wise team, but yet he's pulling some things out of these guys that has been pretty impressive. Syracuse, when you have a coach that, I don't know, it's something slipping there. You know, it's that feeling that I have that I expressed about North Carolina.
Yep.
It's just like it's not there. You don't feel it. And there's a team that's just full of talent. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Any thoughts there, Xavion?
Well, I'm sure Boeheim and Syracuse is missing out on, I think it was Darius Bagley. I think they'd really like him to be on the roster right now contributing. But I'm right there with you. I believe that Boeheim is kind of, he's lost his edge. Yeah, the 2-3 zone defensively, that works and stuff like that. It's great, but you know, with the shift in basketball to shooting 3-pointers, like it's nothing. The 2-3 zone is literally the worst defense to be in, too, because that just allows you to shoot threes all day long. And if you're hitting or any type of consistent, you're just getting wide open shots on a routine basis. In terms of Pastor, he showed, you know, his ability to coach when he was at Memphis, and he was probably getting a little bit better recruits and quality players and whatnot. But he was able to show and coach them up to even a higher level, which led him to get in this job. And again, it's you got to look at it and contribute to working with what you got and utilizing that the best of your ability. And if Syracuse has so much talent and that's not happening, then we have to call into question the coaching and whatnot, because it's not like it's one thing if Jeff Capel can have Pitt's talent and be in every game and making it seem like, you know, that there's no drop off. And then you have a team that has all the talent or has much more talent and is consistently just dropping the ball and executing it. It's kind of, you have to go upstairs or look at the top of the pyramid and see what's the issue up there and what's affecting everything below. I think Boeheim is, it's a countdown. It's his, lukewarm. I'd say a lukewarm hot seat for him. If this continues throughout the season, I definitely say it'll be not necessarily on fire, but it'll be hot. And I could see this carrying over to next season where it would be become a hot seat. I think it's the era, the end of the Boeheim era at Syracuse is approaching us.
You know, and it's so difficult to talk about something like that because the immediate reaction is, you know, everybody's hackles get up about that, especially Syracuse fans. And But you need to look at it realistically. When you have coaches who are entrenched for a long period of time, it becomes very comfortable and you don't like change, and especially if you've been winning. But if there's a, you know, you start to slip and, you know, you start losing games and there's no consistency, you seriously have to look at making changes, even if that coach has been there for an eternity. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I understand all the factors involved there in what you just said. I am sure just set somebody off. And you know what? It's a shame that they're not being realistic about this. And they really need to look at this from a realistic standpoint. Really, I mean, are we at this point where we can't look at somebody and say objectively that they're taking this team down the wrong path, and it has been going on for a couple of years, and you see that decay, and you need to make a change. So that's, I guess that's going to be on the agenda. We'll see next year probably is when this is going to rear its ugly head. We'll see if that happens. Maybe he'll be smart enough to say, hey, you know what? Truly, it's time to move on and to gracefully bow out. And let's get some new blood in here and make something happen. And let's talk about Virginia finding a place for a 7-1 three-point shooter in their offensive scheme with their win over Clemson. And I'm going to go outside the norm here, and I'm going to skip over to Will here, Xavion, because I know he wants to talk about this. I can,
no way, does he?
Yeah, he's wearing me out. So, Will, it's all yours.
No, I'm watching this game. You figure the biggest difference in this game was what you mentioned. You know, Virginia was only up by a couple points in the early part of the second half, and Tony Bennett brought in Jay Huff off the bench and ended up playing the best game of his Virginia career. He went out, you know, blocked a shot, hit a three, had a couple of nice dunks, and this is like the first time where you can say Jay Huff has made a difference in a game. You know, the Virginia fans have been looking for him to really blossom. He hasn't played well defensively, and that's why he hasn't earned the minutes that people think he has. And he responded yesterday with 11 points, 7 rebounds, and a block shot in this 10 minutes or whatever. But he made the difference in this game. He, like I say, it was a 1-point game or 2-point game when he came in, and once he took a seat, it was up back up to double digits, and Virginia cruised from there. The defense was especially stout once again, holding Clemson to just 25% shooting and 3 of 19 for three. And I thought there was a potential look ahead spot here with what Virginia has on this on their schedule coming up this week, with Virginia Tech at home and then at Duke next Saturday. And yeah, a pretty impressive win. And I tell you what, those are going to be two hellacious games.
Yeah.
This upcoming week.
Yep. Tech
Virginia might have an argument to be number one. I would say, if they end up winning both of those games next week.
I don't know how they couldn't be. If they take out both Duke, Tech and Duke.
It's without question the number one team in the country.
I mean, if you're voting against Virginia. Yeah, if you're voting against Virginia at that point, you're a fool. Of course, there was...
We're a Virginia Tech fan.
Story.
Yeah.
There's... Story, there's a story, and I kind of delved into this a little bit about people who vote and being homers and stuff. And there's a guy that's promising not to vote in the AP, never to vote for Duke, and he was taking a task for that. And he should be. I mean, it's stupid. I'm sorry. If you're a voter, you ought to be looking at all of this stuff objectively and making a reasoned argument about why teams are number 1 through 25 or outside of that. And for somebody to say, I'm never going to blah, 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 nonsense, and wipe them out, take them off. They should not be voting for anything, including voting, period. that's often how we get people that we've got. Xavion. Tell me, observations about Virginia. I want to hear what your thoughts are at this point, because we've looked at Virginia from a defensive standpoint and just incredible play, but there's a new spin in house on offense, and how Tony Bennett's doing things, and he's throwing some different looks out there that may come in handy against teams like Virginia Tech and Duke.
I mean, it's kind of been the topic of this podcast, and it's the coaching. I mean, I remember when UVA started popping up as a quality basketball program and whatnot, and to see that they've maintained that shows you the level of coaching that's going on over there. The fact that, you know, as Will was saying, Huff wasn't getting a lot of playing time because he wasn't doing what he was supposed to do probably in practice. He wasn't playing to the level or standard that Tony Bennett believed he needed to be getting legitimate minutes. But who's to say that, you know, that lesson that was learned, I'm sure, kind of helped Huff overall become a better player for the long term and better for UVA, because to come in and play 10 minutes and have 11-7 in a block, that's an energy play right there. You gave the team the necessary boost to extend the lead and maintain the lead. That's the biggest part of that, in my opinion, has always been coaching. That most players don't just have that come out of them. The ones that just naturally have that come out are the ones that are getting million-dollar contracts and whatnot from the NBA. But if you're able as a coach to draw that out of a player who hasn't been showing that throughout the season, that's based off of your ability to bring the best out of the players. What I see with UVA is fantastic. I generally enjoy watching their style of play, because they're going to play you on defense. They're going to match up with you, and they're going to force you to score. And when I say force you to score, is you're not going to get any easy layups. You're not going to run a little trick play and make a run on them. You're going to have to score each and every bucket by playing the best style of basketball you can on each and every possession. They make you work for it. So again, that's a program's tenacity. That's what's embedded in the program and in the players is that type of work ethic. And again, that starts at the top. So I love what I'm seeing with UVA, and I look forward to seeing how, you know, it continues to blossom and grow.
In case somebody hasn't already said this, because I haven't seen it anywhere, if they get by Virginia Tech and Duke, this is especially if Huff plays. Okay, this is a new term that needs to be applied. Huff will puff and blow your house down.
Yeah, you get credit for that. That's a good one.
All right. Anyway, be sure to follow Will on Twitter at Will's World MN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACCTheQ. You'll find ACCNation.net on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation and at ACC Nation Sports on Facebook. Lock in your homepage at ACCNation.net. Until next time, cheers.
Oh, right on.